We have the pleasure of meeting John Cox, the principal horn of the Oregon Symphony Orchestra in our Spokane Public Radio studios. He's in town for an event that's called Hornapalooza, and we'll be talking about that as we get in. First of all, I'd like to welcome John. Welcome to Spokane, and welcome to Spokane Public Radio.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
And let's determine a little bit about you before we get into the event, which is the Hornapalooza happening at Whitworth University this Saturday. And it's an interesting series of events for that. But first of all, about you, when did you first encounter the horn, and was it something that somebody made you play, or was it a choice? How did they all get started?
Some birthdays you never forget. And for me, it was my 10th. And I was just finishing up fourth grade, and our band director told my father, he will play an instrument. It's not, would he like to? No, he will play an instrument. Nobody went against Mildred Blake. She was a force of nature. So I ended up starting on the mellophone on my 10th birthday. And I cried as only a 10-year-old is going, why can do? Well, one thing led to another, and eventually I got one of the school French horns. And after the right combination of bribes and threats, I improved somewhat. And to the point that 6 years later, I was actually in our local Evansville Philharmonic. I'm originally from Indiana. The Evansville Philharmonic is third horn when I was still in high school. And Evansville Philharmonic was an orchestra about the size of the Spokane Symphony. And so I was in that, and I also was in the Owensboro Philharmonic in Owensboro, Kentucky. Similar situation while I was in my last year of high school. Strange thing, but I was on the road a lot at night for rehearsals. And it stuck.
Mm-hmm. And you did not come into horn as your primary, well, you did not set off in life intending for horn to be your primary support or your career.
Absolutely not. I thought for sure I was going to go into the sciences because I liked math and I liked the sciences, and I kind of backed into the horn, and it just kept pushing me in that direction. And then the people pushing the horn in my face, and yeah. So it seemed, frankly, a good way to get off the farm at that point. Mm-hmm, so it stuck.
Now, what was your journey to the Oregon Symphony?
I went to school, in my undergrad school, at the University of Evansville in Evansville, Indiana, and played, as I said, in the Evansville Philharmonic for the 4 years I was there and the 1 year in high school. Then I went to Boston University to study with Charles Kavalofsky, principal horn of the Boston Symphony, who lived in Spokane a fair number of years before he decided to get serious about the horn. So he actually has very strong ties to Spokane and still knows a few folks there. In fact, I think he knows Vern, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. And I still stay in contact with Chuck. So I went to Boston, ran out of money at the end of my first year, and skipped the country, literally. I took an audition for an orchestra that was being formed in Caracas, Venezuela. And so I took off for 2 years and played in South America.
This would make a great film. Now, again, how did you wind up with the Oregon Symphony?
Well,
then?
I finished my 2-year contract in Venezuela, and they paid very well at that time, the late 70s, early 80s. And I went back to Boston to finish my master's degree. They were more than willing and happy to welcome me and my freshly fattened up bank account back. So I paid off all the loans that were outstanding and finished my master's, and took a number of auditions. And there happened to be one for the Oregon Symphony. And lo and behold, I won the audition. I'd had a goal at that time to have a position in a major United States orchestra by the time I was 25. And so I was informed at the end of audition day that, yes, indeed, the job was mine. And it was, I was 24, 364 days and 21 hours old. Well, I beat it by 3 hours.
Good for you. Good for you. And I would think that being, for a musician, the musical scene in Portland is certainly very active. It's not at the level that we think of in terms of Los Angeles or New York or Chicago. So if you set your sights, what I'm trying to get at is that I think you landed in a good place mm-hmm. because Portland is an extremely livable city, whereas if you get into some of the truly huge cities, you've got to contend with the stress of living in those places, wonderful as they are, and still be able to pick up that horn and just sail on through programs.
It's an interesting point you make there, Jim. And the interesting thing is that what the big cities have is that those are part of the offerings that those cities have, not only for their own residents, but also as cultural icons to visit, much as you'll visit the Field Museum in Chicago or the MoMA in New York, the New York Philharmonic, the Chicago Symphony. Those are both destination things to see, and they're great and wonderful institutions. One of the nice things about Portland is that, and other cities like that, and frankly, including Spokane, is that the arts in these places are really primarily for local consumption. And it's a wonderful thing that these organizations' missions are quite different. Yes, it's to create and present the best music that you can. And frankly, the Oregon Symphony's abilities and our reputation is extremely high now. There are a lot of orchestras with double and triple our budgets that, if I can pat ourselves on the back, don't meet our standards performance-wise. Mm-hmm. Our recordings we're putting out now are they're second to none, and including one that we just did this fall of a brand new piece we premiered last spring by Jeffrey Kahane's son, Gabriel. And it's a piece that's entitled Emergency Shelter Intake Form. It's about a 50-minute oratorio type of work, and it deals with the social problems of our age in a very listenable, fun way. And we presented it last spring, and it garnered such national attention that we immediately, the first thing we did 4 days into the season was record it. And it will be out very shortly.
Very good. All right. And one last question regarding your service with the Oregon Symphony. Is you've been there for how many years now?
I hate to admit it. This is my 37th season.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you have brought that level of experience and expertise to us here in Spokane to be the principal clinician for an event called Hornapalooza. What's the basic concept?
The basic concept is that horn players like to get together and socialize, probably because nobody else will socialize with us. But it's one of those things that the horn world, 50 years ago, a couple of people had the bright idea of holding a week of nothing but French horn events down in Florida. Thus was born the International Horn Society, and out of that, and every year there is an international event all around the world. I've been guest clinician at events in Australia and London, and presented at a number of the events in the United States that have been held. Then there are the regional events, and the Hornapalooza Day represents one of the local and regional events that happen of the International Horn Society, where horn players can come together and congregate. They can listen to music. Sometimes they can try new instruments, different equipment, and basically to socialize and enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. And that's what Hornapalooza is all about.
Mm-hmm. And there are a number. The basic thing is that this is for horn players, but there is a community aspect to this as well, because there's going to be a performance. You're going to give a recital at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, and then at 5 o'clock there's going to be a large ensemble concert that is happening, where it's all the folks who have come get together, and a spectacular noise will be raised in honor of the French horn.
Very much so. And I'd like to mention that these events are free to the public to come and attend.
And we should say that these are all taking place on the Whitworth University campus in the newly renovated music building. And if you've not been there, this is a chance for you to see something that is really one of the gems of things new around the Inland Northwest. And they take place in the music building, specifically in the Myrie Recital Hall, with other events in the rehearsal room. Okay, let me ask you about a couple of things here. One is that part of this is going to be a mock audition. And the horn is a notoriously difficult instrument to play. And if we talked about all the things that could go wrong in terms of a performance, we'd be here until tomorrow morning, probably.
And lots of stories there. Some of them, well, yes.
Yes. And usually things that happen only in the most exposed locations. They never can sort of happen when there's this huge ensemble around you. But never mind. But tell us, just for curiosity's sake, what are some of the pieces that are excerpted from typically for a horn audition?
Well, first I might start, Jim, by explaining what an audition is in the music world. For most jobs, you send in a resume. You see the advertisement for the job that you would like, and you send in a resume. And based on your resume, you might get invited to come in and do an interview. Well, auditions are very similar to that, especially in the orchestral world, in that you see the job you would like, and you send in your resume, at which point, as in the real world, you have them screened by a person or a committee, and then you have the audition process. Well, in an interview, you get to have give and take, and you meet people, and you shake hands, and you can get a feel for the room and how you might like to couch your answers and or respond. Or you might get a hit that, hey, I just don't want to work here with these people at all. An audition is nothing like that. Mm-hmm. An audition is however many people show up. It's not uncommon to have sometimes up to 100 people show up for an audition. And they're all heard over the space of 2 days. You get to warm up at an assigned time. Then you're led out onto the stage, which is behind the screen.
Mm-hmm.
You do not see who's on the other side. And equally important, they can't see mm-hmm. you. And auditions, they take this secrecy so carefully, especially in the days when orchestras were all male and mm-hmm. women were just starting to be accepted into the orchestra, that we put down carpet runners so that you can't hear anything about the person, what gender, what their age might be, what their physical condition might be.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know if they've got crutches, a wheelchair, or are riding in on a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell. All you hear are the notes actually coming out. So what happens in a first round of an audition is everybody is given generally about a minute of a solo from the standard repertoire, usually assigned. in our case, something from Strauss or a Mozart concerto. Everybody plays the same minute. And then you play orchestral excerpts. And I can tell you in the Oregon Symphony, you can be eliminated after the first three excerpts. And the most unkind words you can ever hear from behind the screen are, "Thank you very much."
Right. Never did thank you have quite the bite as when you're in a situation like that. Yeah.
And so you play the excerpts, and assuming you make it all the way through the first round list and everybody plays exactly the same excerpts in the same order, you wait for the group that you play with, usually five or six people in a round, and you wait to see if you've been advanced to the next round. And eventually you get to a finals round, at which point the screens are lifted. And at that time, the music director is also in the audience. Not until that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody again plays exactly the same materials. And at the end of the day, there's usually a winner and a lot of losers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what would you, and I assume that this will come up at some point in these workshops, how would you counsel a young horn player who is about to go to their first serious audition? I know there are too many things, but you know, pick a couple of key things, that key pieces of advice that you would give them.
Be totally prepared and try not to be overwhelmed by the experience, and yet accept the fact that you will be. There is just no way to really prepare that first time out, as in any endeavor, such as athletics. The first time Peyton Manning stepped onto the field with an actual contract in his pocket, he was a lot more nervous than the last time he stepped onto the field.
Sure, yeah.
And just be prepared. Study with the best people you can. Learn as much about music as possible. And that means a lot of this, because we're not just judging how well you physically can play the instrument. It's how well you can take the physical abilities that you have and use those to tell the story the music is telling. What is it about your playing that is going to make an audience member say, "That makes me think of something," or, "Wow, I feel better having heard that," or, "I wish I knew more about that." Those are the levels that you really start to get to. It's not who's the player, who's the performer, often it is, but the best musicians are who's the storyteller and how well can they tell it.
Nicely put. You as performer, there are many really wonderful horn solos in the standard repertory. Are there any that, setting aside any kind of anxiety or terror that they may induce, what's among the ones at the top of your list of you say, "Yes, I get to play this again"?
One of my favorite pieces to play is the Tchaikovsky Fifth Symphony. I love that solo. Where's a piece of wood, Jim? I've had very good luck with that piece.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that it's just one of those pieces. One of three pieces that I had on a lecture that I gave in Australia on interpretation, which was kind of an amusing thing. When I gave that lecture on interpretation, and it was in Australia, I just happened to look up and see who had walked in the audience, and sitting amongst the people about three rows back was the man who for 30 years was more or less the god of the French horn, Barry Tuckwell.
Oh, my.
And I said, "Well, my." But there's something about that solo that it is such a wonderful moment of repose. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was able to write this moment of repose in a time of such turbulence, both in his personal life, but also the turbulence in Euro-Russian life in the lead up to the Great War.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that was 25 years away, the lead up was starting then. It was very strong. And he writes this beautiful moment of repose. And as a horn player, how do you take people's strife, their anxieties, and calm them for those 2 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And that piece is in the air. The Spokane Symphony opened their season with, among other things, that piece with a horn solo very, very nicely played by our principal horn, Emily Brown. And also we broadcast the Boise Philharmonic, and mm-hmm. they did that piece early on in this season. So it's in the air there. And it's one of those pieces that you really never truly tire of hearing.
You don't. There's a magic about the humanity that Tchaikovsky exudes that he puts in. His symphonies have a lot of similarities, but they're also very different in the stories that each one of them tell.
Mm-hmm.
There's the particularly the first three symphonies and then the last three symphonies, not counting the Manfred Symphony, which we've actually recorded with the Oregon Symphony, but is not a favorite piece of mine. But you get the early symphonies, 1, 2, and 3. They're very Russian, and they're very much a feeling of the joy of being Russian and young and mm-hmm, alive. Mm-hmm. Then you get the last three symphonies, 4, 5, and 6. They're very Russian, but they're more introspective. They're the rage and thunder of the fourth movements of the fourth symphony, which we played 2 or 3 weeks ago, actually. And then the fifth symphony, which we actually performed last night. And then it's got its moments of drive, and it's maybe the last happiest period of Tchaikovsky's life. And then you've got the drama of the sixth symphony. And that's the best word I can use. There's just so much drama in the sixth symphony. It doesn't end happily, like so much of life.
No, nor did Tchaikovsky's life.
No.
We're talking with John Cox, the principal horn with the Oregon Symphony Orchestra in Spokane for Hornapalooza, taking place tomorrow, Saturday, beginning at 8:30 at Whitworth University campus in the Music Building. And among the things that are happening, you're going to give a lecture in the afternoon called Keeping Horn Playing Fun, which, I don't know, I'd have to work on that one to really parse it through, but great ideas will come from that as well, I'm sure. And also there's an Alphorn demonstration, which if nothing else gives you a chance to just capture how long a horn actually is.
Those things, they stretch. And I suppose we're all the most familiar with hearing the Alphorn on the on television with the Ricola commercials.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I know the guy that owned the particular Alphorn that they recorded with, an acquaintance of mine in Denver. The Alphorn being made of wood, you make instruments out of the materials you have.
Mm-hmm.
People at the seashore initially made the first trumpets out of conch shells. You can make, I have one. I also have an instrument made out of a steer horn that's been hollowed out. And
oh my.
Of course, you have ram's horns for shofars,
mm-hmm.
and you use those. And those are basically signaling devices. And then, of course, the Alphorn, you want something that can be heard. Those areas didn't have any of the seaside resources mm-hmm. or the animals that could have produced
but lots of trees.
They got lots of trees.
And also, you're going to be doing a solo recital. Name a couple of pieces that you're going to be playing.
A little Sanson romance that I like to open up with. a piece by 20th century composer Gilbert Venter, an English composer, entitled Hunter's Moon, which we're currently in, referring to the Hunter's Moon cycle, lunar cycle. Jennifer Brummett and I are going to be performing a duet with piano entitled Across Time and Space by a composer named Bissell. And then I'm going to be doing five short movements by an American composer, Richard Faith, who's from my area where I grew up in, near Evansville, Indiana.
Very good. And then following is a large ensemble concert with all the day's participants. And do get yourself to John's recital at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon, and then stay for the large ensemble concert at 5. Again, Hornapalooza is the event. It's on the Whitworth University campus in the Music Building, specifically the performances in the Myra Recital Hall. John Cox, thank you so much for coming to Spokane, and thank you so much for being with us this morning and telling us about yourself, your instrument, and this event on the weekend.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.